Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Robert, we have new WWE Women's Tag Team Champions. It's been a bit since some names were attached to those titles. A bit of a surprise, though, in terms of where I thought they were going to take this with Raquel Gonzalez, Raquel Rodriguez, and Aaliyah beating Io Sky and Dakota Kai to become champions. Yes, a little bit of shenanigans, but I don't want to lead the question here. We'll discuss, obviously, but what did you think of the main event tonight, and what did you think of the decision to go with Rodriguez and Aaliyah as tag team champions?
Wasn't the biggest fan of either scenario, really. I think especially the way Aaliyah generally has been presented on TV, her, you know, now being a champion kind of feels like we're cheapening it just a little bit. I know she's got the big underdog character, but that felt just a little off. And I thought the main event, too, just felt a little off. Like, it was fine. There was nothing really wrong with it. It felt longer than I think it actually was. It kind of started to just drag a little bit. It never got into, like, this other gear that I think the stakes of the match had been set up for, and the WWE themselves really set up for leading in even minutes before the match.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, by saying that, hey, the main event seemed off. I think you're being a little too kind, even. I really did not think that was a good showing for really either of those four women. I mean, we know what Io Sky and Dakota Kai can do in the ring. Raquel Gonzalez, too. And Aaliyah, you know, I think she's been around for a really long time. And, you know, so she's experienced in that way. But I just don't get the sense from her that you know, pro wrestling has clicked collectively. Like, I think she's had a lot of different characters, and she's had a lot of different ring styles, and so she's a little bit rough around the edges in there. And, you know, I think this tournament that they just wrapped up a few minutes ago, I thought it really had its moments along the way in terms of making the titles seem like something that these women really want badly. I mean, it got time on TV. There was competitive matches all the way through. And I guess I think I sit here right now and look at this and go, well, you know, this match, you know, look, we're 10 minutes after the show finished up, but I'm sitting here now going, that was probably like the worst match of the tournament. And so from a main event perspective, just that the match happened in that slot, I don't think the match itself was kind of worthy of the moment that it got, unfortunately. And then I'll be honest, like, I gotta like buy a vowel on the decision to go with Rodriguez and Sky here. I mean, they've spent a lot of time building up that Bayley faction, and I think it had a lot of momentum going into Clash at the Castle on Sunday, and like just a kind of a pristine presentation of Sky and Dakota Kai. You know, you really get the sense that Bayley was leading those two, and to kind of not have them win this, I think throws some cold water on whatever momentum they had. So yeah, it's not getting a thumbs up for me, at least at this point. But take any of that and run wild with it.
Well, and I think also when you think about the teams that were sacrificed in commission of this tournament, like, you know, some of that's what made it kind of cool is you had for once in WWE people, you know, beating each other and these things mattering, and then, you know, the half jobber team wins. That right. Just to me, that feels like, you know, I liked when Ryder and Hawkins did it a couple years ago, but this feels like that when this is supposed to be the changing of the guard with this entire division. And as you said, that Bayley team is like the top heel on Raw right now. Like they are the focus of so many segments, and to have them coming off of a loss into a six man or six woman, which is, you know, supposed to be just kind of like a fun match anyway. I think the heat and everything just made more sense going the other direction. You know, as we're even kind of talking through it, I think it's aging poorly, you know, even 15 minutes after the fact.
No, it is. It really is. And here's the other thing too. I think when you look at the match and you go, okay, what are they trying to maybe accomplish here with this win? I think you can say to yourself, well, okay, they're trying to build heat on the six woman tag that's going to take place at Clash at the Castle. But even if that's the case, and you're like, okay, Belair, Asuka, and Alexa Bliss are going to run out there, they're going to, you know, interfere, cost them the match, and that's going to inevitably, you know, lead to, you know, more tension between those two teams going into Saturday. I don't think they executed that well enough. If that was the plan, like, it was not clear enough from, like, the match story perspective that it was, you know, Bianca Belair, Bliss, and Asuka's involvement that cost Team Bayley the win. I think if you're going to go that angle, you got to go all the way with it. And I thought they tried to, like, be a little too cute and walk that fine line booking this where it was like, well, we want to like have this interference, but we also don't want to, you know, crown a tournament winner because of interference. So let's walk this fine line. And I just don't think that strategy worked. They didn't pull it off.
No. And you have to consider the baby faces that were being the beneficiary of this too, because it's not like the crowd has just been dying week after week to see them get this victory either. So right. It's not like there was that extra level of heat in that way. And then I think, as we've both alluded to in our statements, the kind of comatose match they had just in general doesn't help any part of this situation.
Yeah. So I think in some ways going into tonight, you had the WWE Women's Tag Titles mean more than they have in quite some time. And even around the waist of Sasha Banks and Naomi, I think, you know, they really were positioned well through this tournament. I liked the video package that set up the match tonight. I thought that was really effective to build up the match and cultivate stakes and, you know, emotional investments and things of that nature. I thought that did a nice job with that. But now, Robert, we sit here in the end, tournament's over. A lot of top tier wrestlers were involved but didn't win, and you have the belts on, you know, the waist of, you know, second, maybe even third tier talent in the women's division. What do you make of that? If you just analyze it from a standpoint of, okay, does Triple H buy into the tag team titles for the women's division or not? I mean, does this tell you anything about kind of where he views them?
I think it would be hard to really gain anything off of it, just because I think the way the titles were presented all the way till the end of that match, there is indication that they're at least going to be worth, like, receive more of a focus than they did before. I honestly can't put, like, this grand narrative. I think this was just a piece of bad booking that was preceded by a bad match. I don't know if there's really a deeper meaning to be gained here.
Hey, you know what? If it talks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's a duck, right? I think you're right. Like, it sometimes just match doesn't work, booking doesn't work, and I think that's what we kind of have, with this. But we'll open it up. Want to get everybody's opinion on that, so we'll open up the phone lines here in a minute. But let's pause. We'll stop there, set the table, and then we'll start taking those calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the August 29th, 2022 edition of Monday Night Raw. I'm PW Torch assistant editor Zach Haydorn, filling in for Wade. Wade will be on the VIP side of things a little bit later tonight, running down the show on his Wade Keller hotline. If you're interested in VIP membership, pwtorch.com/goVIP. You can check out, a host of content, back issues of the PW Torch weekly newsletter, ad-free version of pwtorch.com, podcasts, such a vast array of different styles with different opinions on different promotions. It's massive. Check it out. Wade Keller hotline is included in that. So pwtorch.com/goVIP. If you haven't checked out our VIP membership page, do so. I think you'll be happy that you did. And this is a good time to do it with a very, very busy week in professional wrestling upon us. The other voice you hear with me tonight is from the PW Torch Daily Cast, Robert Vallejos. Robert, a pleasure, as always, to talk wrestling with you, man. Welcome on into the show.
It really is. You know, I hadn't been on the show in the Triple H era, so I was starting to wonder, you know, if I was lumped in with the Vince era. So I'm glad to be back on.
Well, you know, that, but like, you know, there wasn't some weird Firefly Funhouse Bray Wyatt segment tonight either that we have to break down. That was kind of your MO for a while too.
Yeah, I'm glad that's not my MO anymore.
No, I'm kidding. But it was strange. Like you and I did these shows at least 3 or 4 times where it was like, man, we have to lead with Bray Wyatt stuff.
We're the only ones in the world apparently that didn't like it either. So we just had to hear tell us how we didn't know what we were talking about every week. Yeah.
Correct. That did happen. Well, want to get to all your stuff that you do for the Torch and talk about the podcast. We'll do that in a little bit. But in the meantime, let's open up the phone line. 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. Press 1 if you are interested in chatting with us. That lets me know that you want to get on the air. Not a super long line for callers right now, so get on in if you're interested. If you don't want to chat, you can send us an email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll get to the emails as the show progresses, and then maybe in bulk at the end of the show too. But with that, Robert, let's jump right into calls, man. If you're up for it,
let's do it.
All right, we'll start off first. Let's see here. 410. I believe this is Keith, Reverend Keith in Baltimore. Reverend Keith, is this you?
Yes, sir. Zach and Robert, two of my favorites. How you guys doing tonight?
Keith? Doing good. Doing good, Reverend Keith. Thanks for calling. What did you think of the show?
Well, my favorite aspect of the show was the Bloodline Kevin Owens segment. I thought that was gold. And as I had tweeted, I had mentioned almost a month ago on one of these call-in shows that I could foresee Kevin Owens being reunited with Sami Zayn and going for the tag team championships. And that is the road which we are headed down. I like that. I like the way that the story played out tonight with Sami being hesitant to use the chair. And I think this will be a great grudge match, Sami and KO reuniting at some point. It may not be this weekend in Cardiff, but at some point in the not-too-distant future, I can see KO and Sami perhaps even winning the tag team titles. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, Reverend Keith, I mean, I'm with you on that. I mean, on a multitude of different levels. First of all, I thought it was a really effective segment tonight too. Just the performances by all four of those guys. In particular, we'll get to Kevin Owens in a minute, but in particular, Sami Zayn and the Usos. I mean, those guys have just chemistry, and they're kind of like the off the cuff looks that they give one another, and just the way they interact, I think is really not just effective in terms of telling this story, but like the broader story too, with Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn, you know, working to kind of find his place in the bloodline. Some of it's a little goofy, but it all, because Zayn plays it so well and because the Usos play it so well back, and Reigns too, it really comes across as authentic. And I think that's what's kind of spurring on, I think, this interest in Sami Zayn. And, so that's the first point. In terms of the tag team titles, I agree. I think that's where they're heading on this. I think you're going to see, a long Zayn versus the Bloodline angle, coming up. And whether that's with Reigns to start off or Reigns to finish, I think along the way, you're going to get Kevin Owens and Zayn against the Usos. And I think that's going to be one hell of a tag team match. Because when you look at it, like the Usos have beaten and worked with virtually every tag team on SmackDown or Raw, Robert. So you got to find something new to give those guys. I mean, they've held up their end of the bargain. I think they're a main event level act especially along the side of Roman Reigns, obviously. But, you know, you need to give them good opponents. And, you know, given the momentum that both Zayn and Kevin Owens have right now, I think those two guys are as good as any. Robert, what about you?
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you on all your points there. It's the one storyline they could pull out where it's – I mean, obviously they're not literal twin brothers and cousins the way the rest of the Bloodline are, but that can really feel authentic as sort of a brotherhood to take on the Bloodline. And I think that's a nice touch. You know, there's been times over the last 7 or so years where I'm like, you know, Sammy and KO need to just stay as far away from each other. But I think they've done a good enough job in the last year or so, really since both of them re-signed, where both characters had a certain level of focus, although it was focused in different directions. And you know those paths are always going to come together. And they have such good chemistry. And they have good chemistry with the Usos as well, which doesn't seem very hard to do. It seems like a lot of people have good chemistry in general with the Usos. And we need this. I've been banging this drum for like 6 months, ever since WrestleMania, since they unified the titles. They needed to make the Usos basically the other main event because they're tied into the biggest storyline in the company. They're finally starting to do that, and it's translated into the Raw side of things. So that was really the hardcore promotion for Sunday, I thought, outside of the Edge stuff, was that segment. Like, that was what was the go-home side of tonight, like way more so than like we talked about in the main event.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And let's talk about Kevin Owens real quick, and then Keith, I'll throw back to you in a second. You know, Kevin Owens, in this kind of Paul Levesque era, you know, the last, I don't know, 3-4 weeks maybe, has really turned a corner with his character. It's less silly, it's more serious. He's got the same kind of charisma behind it, but it's tweaked from a different perspective. It has just a little bit of a different scope on it. And it's coming across, I think, really well. Leaning babyface, Robert. You know, if he keeps on this path, like, is he somebody that, you know, you can put in front of Roman Reigns again? I mean, we've been there, done that. They had a lot of matches about 18 months ago. So it's not exactly fresh outside of the fact that it's a new Kevin Owens character.
Yeah, I don't really think so. I think he could be feuding with Reigns the way he is now, like, you know, theoretically, as part of the bigger storyline. I don't know if you can really go back to it on pay-per-view, although are we really at the point where we have cycled through all of the opponents to that level that we have to actually go back to the initial ones? I mean, he's having his second pay-per-view cycle with Drew, which, I mean, a completely different context the first time in the Hill Run. So I don't know if they can get him to that level of credibility other than, you know, they're out of opponents. But you also got to factor in, I think, the limited schedule of Roman. There may not be a need to actually go there. You might be able to hold it off. You want to build a big TV rating like they did with the Riddle match? Maybe that would be the way to go if you're going to do it. I just kind of don't see it as a pay-per-view opponent. And that's not a reflection on KO, really. It's just where they've been, how everyone's been booked, and what's coming in the future.
Yeah, we get it. You're a KO hater. I get it.
It's like the farthest thing from the truth.
I'm kidding. No, I think you're right. I think you're right, ultimately. Like, I mean, look, it really wasn't all that long ago that I think they had 3 pay-per-view matches in a row. But to your point, that's not even really the point, because we're not going to get a heavy dose of Roman Reigns anyway. So it's not like you're in this position where you have to find an opponent month to month for him. I mean, that's the benefit of Reigns working the schedule that he is, and the title kind of being special in that regard. You don't have to come up with feuds in the world title space that aren't necessarily world title worthy. They don't have that issue. A TV, popping a TV rating, I think, would be effective in that instance. So I think you're right on the money there, man. But overall, you know, this, it's funny, without Drew McIntyre and without Roman Reigns, this segment still did, I think, a really effective job in not only hyping up the match, but the Bloodline in particular. Like, I thought it did a nice job. The finish, not so much, but they just really present as this top tier team that's tough to dethrone. And whether that's the Usos out there or Reigns out there, they're able to cultivate kind of that reaction and that emotion. And that's a big deal, especially when you don't have your world champion beside you every single night. Keith, let's go back to you.
Yes, and I totally agree. And I can't wait to see the tag title matchup between the Usos versus KO and Sami Zayn. Now, I know you guys talked about the Swerve ending, and I'm seeing on Twitter where a lot of people dislike the fact that Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah were crowned tag team champs. But I have to give Triple H credit. He was working the marks. He gave people just the opposite of what they were expecting. I would say maybe only 20% of the purists, wrestling purists, such as the three of us, thought that Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah would come out of Raw tonight in Pittsburgh as the newly crowned tag team champions. So I like Triple H's direction. You know, he's going in reverse. He's using reverse psychology. So I respect him for that. And I hope that it would not only remove the stereotype of Aaliyah, which Robert already alluded to, but it will also propel Raquel, because you can see that they have high hopes for her. So, you know, it'll put Sky and Kyle on the back burner for now while they feud with Bianca and Asuka and Alexa. So I thought it was a good way to swerve the marks this ending. Your thoughts once again?
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, I don't think you want to quote unquote swerve the marks just to do that. Like, I think sometimes in pro wrestling, especially, you know, it's not always a complicated formula. A lot of times the right thing to do is the right thing to do, even if you know that it's coming. You know, for example, we talked really quickly about the Riddle Roman Reigns match on SmackDown from a handful of weeks ago, and you know, like, imagine quote unquote swerving the marks in that situation. Like, would you do it there? Would you put that title on Riddle just to swerve everybody? And to me, the answer is definitely no on that, because you have business on the table with Roman Reigns. He's working at a high level. It's not really a knock on Riddle. It's just that you've got other things on the table. And so if the original idea was, well, we definitely want Io Sky and Dakota Kai to win these titles, Robert, I don't think you want to start cultivating a thought process that goes, oh, well, let me just trick everybody just to keep everybody on their toes. There's a time and a place, but that I don't think you want that to be really anywhere near your booking strategy, because you'll have a very inconsistent product that way. Robert?
Yeah, and I think specifically in this situation where you're trying to rehab a title that was never taken seriously in the 3 or so years that it's been in existence and been in circulation. So I think I would take extra care. Like, I don't think that's a bad philosophy all the time, as long as you can sort of retroactively explain it as well. And I don't know, like, this isn't as egregious where you would have to do something. You have to do something like this, but to your overall question, just as a general philosophy, it's something I'm not that in favor of, unless it really is going to have a payoff that's really going to work out, other than the whole idea of, you know, swerving the marks. I think the whole thing, no matter what, when you're booking for the, you know, the quote unquote marks, that's when we get really bad television, and history proved that out from WWE, some stuff's going on in AEW, WCW, Impact, anywhere else Vince Russo has been involved in. I think that's usually the case.
I love it. Nothing like a little Vince Russo burn on a Monday night. I mean, you're right. I agree. But here's the thing though, Keith, too, you know, I'm willing to look and see how this goes. You know, this is, you know, an opinion of an analysis of a match and of the like finals of this tournament just a few minutes after it ends. And, you know, if Triple H now pivots to this, you know, story of Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah as tag champs, and they go on a nice run and establish themselves, and, you know, you see some development from, you know, Aaliyah in particular, you know, then, okay, we can look back on this and go, all right, well, that made sense because we know what happened after the fact. And so I think at that point, everybody will look on this as in fresh eyes and go, okay, we get what happened here. And I'm willing to let that play out. I still think it at the same time, just has a residual effect on Io Sky and Dakota Kai, which to me are the more important acts at this point in time. But Keith, back to you for any follow-up on that.
Well, I'm willing to weigh it out. Like you said, it's only been 33 minutes. But at the same token, when I say swerve the mark, I mean the unpredictability. You know, for example, when Vince McMahon was in charge, everything was so predictable. You know, you had viewers choosing not to tune in because they knew how the matches would go. It was always 50-50 booking. Whoever won the week before would lose the following week. Whoever was getting a push a year earlier is probably going to be the push now. But with Triple H, he's keeping us on our toes as viewers. So he knows, he follows the trends, he follows Twitter, he follows social media, he follows the podcast, I'm sure, or has other people follow him. He knows what was expected tonight. So what I'm saying, I'm not saying that, you know, you should swerve the mark all the time. But what my point is, I believe tonight he wanted to try something different just to see how it would work out. Keep in mind, he's only been at the helm 4 weeks now. So I truly believe that this was an opportunity to test the waters, so to speak. And that's what I meant when I said swerve the marks, because not too many people believe that Raquel and Aaliyah would win. And basically, and I'm going to tell you what I think, the reason why they didn't think they would win was because they expected the heel team to win so that Sasha and Naomi could show up and challenge them. If Sasha and Naomi weren't a part of the end result, I don't think people would have been so for Sky and Kai winning, because you got to understand, Sky and Kai, they're new to the main roster, just like Raquel and Aaliyah. Matter of fact, Raquel and Aaliyah combined have been on the main longer than the other two. But I think the main reason why people expected Hunter to book the heels to win was because, like you said, they're a hot act, Bayley's their manager, and also the fact that people were expecting Sasha and Naomi to come back and challenge them. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly was a possibility. I mean, it was on the table, I think, for sure, less so now, although that doesn't mean they won't do it, Robert. I mean, we'll have to see, Keith. We'll have to see, you know, where things go and how things play out. But I think, yeah, if you had that expectation and you kind of were reading the news last week and even this morning about Sasha and Naomi's status, you could easily kind of convince yourself that the heels are going over because they're going to, you know, got to do that showdown angle at the end of the show or something like that, and which makes sense. Alas, that's not the direction that they went. Keith, any final points for us tonight?
Here's my final and most pertinent point of the night. From the way I see this story between Roman and Drew playing out, and also the fact that they have given tremendous time to the video packages, to the history of Drew McIntyre, from his resurgence, his recommitment to the business, to his revitalization, to his transformation, I truly believe that he will win the belt Saturday. And not only that, you know, you got to look back. It's been, what, since 1992 when the late, great Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, won the title in Wembley Stadium in a tremendous match with his brother-in-law, Bret the Hitman Hart. These people have paid a good amount of money to see Drew. I know Roman Reigns has a 730 to 740-day reign, but all good things must come to an end. Again, I believe that Paul Heyman might come back and pull a swerve and say it was only for one of the titles, and that's how they get one of the titles off of Roman. But I'm sticking with my prediction from a month ago that Drew will win the title on Saturday in Cardiff, and it will set the stage for them splitting up, you know, the WWE Championship and the Universal Championship. So then that way they'll have a champion on each show. I do believe that the match itself will be highly overbooked because you got a lot of people in this storyline. from Sami Zayn to Kevin Owens, Austin Theory. I think it'll be overbooked, but I think that what WWE would desire to do is to allow the fans to go home happy. And what I would like to see, and I may not see this, and I'll let you go after this, I would love to see at the end of the night both Drew and Sheamus coming into the ring, or Sheamus coming into the ring to join Drew. The pyro goes off, and both of them are holding up the title belts and hugging each other. That's how I would love this show to end in Cardiff on Saturday. Give me your thoughts. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Reverend Keith. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling, as always. Good to talk to you. Yeah, Robert, we don't want to have a full Clash at the Castle preview show here, per se, but I think it's worth discussing from a couple different angles. The first one being the idea that you can peel off a title, a world title off of Roman Reigns, and bring it to Raw, so Raw has that world championship again. Is that something that you think is in the cards at this point?
No. I don't think they're going to now, especially in this era, in this regime, I don't think they're going to cheapen what they have with Roman Reigns. And not to say that, like, giving it to Drew is completely cheap and doing the split off the title, but I think we all know they have the person that's going to take the title off of Roman, and he still needs to heal up. I think if anything, you know, if I do some quick fantasy booking, they're going to really make you believe that Drew's going to get the job done on Sunday. And it's going to be another piece of that heel, you know, reestablishing Roman as the full heel that he has lost a little bit of towards the last few months of this reign.
I agree. I agree. I mean, it's not that it wouldn't be fun to see Drew McIntyre win the belt, and but there's a lot invested in this Roman Reigns thing, and you got to pay it off all the way. And I just don't know that McIntyre. I mean, yes, obviously he gets a lot. Like that's a big moment if he gets that win, but it just seems like there's another place for that to go. So. I think it's going to go that direction. I think you're alluding to Cody Rhodes. That's still the play I'd make. And I'm okay. Like, if things keep going the way that they are, Robert, on this show and on SmackDown, you know, you've got other things week to week that can carry those shows. I mean, you've got Bobby Lashley as the United States champion, who's had a run of some pretty good matches, feels like a big star. The title already repaired in the 3-4 weeks, not fully repaired, but, you know, on the come up. Same thing with the Intercontinental title on SmackDown. Like, I'm in the camp of if you can kind of make those shows and use those belts to kind of have your week to week storylines, and then you've got the tag team titles and you've got the women's titles. Like, you can afford to have somebody at the tip top, undisputed world champion, that's not on the show each week, because I think when that person is, in this case Roman Reigns, it really makes for a special environment. It gives you the opportunity to draw eyes with that guy and with that title. There's a lot of other things that have to be in place around the company and just the structure and hierarchy of the shows to pull that off. But I get the sense that they're trying to set that up, and so if they do it successfully, you're like, Rod will not need a world title. Am I right? Am I wrong?
No, I agree completely with you. I've always liked this idea of having the one champ. I'm less excited about it with a part-time champ across two shows. But I don't take Roman as a part-timer. I know he is technically, but that's not – I don't think that's – how do I say – like, he doesn't disappear completely the way, like, Brock would do when Brock would have the title. And then we would just have to forget Brock was the champion for, like, 3 months. That doesn't happen. And you have the Usos, you have – the storyline keeps going. Like, it keeps moving. He's just not on TV every week, and he wrestles, you know, even at a much rarer clip. So I think they can pull it. I mean, as much as I don't think either of us like the execution tonight, I think tonight main event is the exact illustration of what you are talking about, how you can build a big main event that's not based around just that one world title. And because I mean, honestly, this might sound hyperbolic, like, I don't know, beating Roman now is kind of the new streak. Like what, yeah. When it happens, it's going to be, it's going to mean something. So you, just like I thought they needed to do with the streak, you have to sort of take care of when, where, and how, that you pull that off. And going back to the original, point posed by Keith, I think it's the case again, unfortunately, of Drew being just the right guy at the wrong time. But at the same time, losing to Roman, it's not losing to Cena either. Like, your career isn't dead after the fact, in the same way that it was whenever you'd go through the Cena grinder and then just be at the bottom of the card after that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think this feud has done, like, even if Drew does not complete like the full circle of the story and win the title, in the UK, he's still a repaired act from where he was 4 months ago.
He's much less lame. And I think that this is even kind of before the regime change. But once that focus got there, it really got there. And now he's a top guy that can be in that mix. And as I said, I don't think losing to Roman, you don't lose so much.
Yeah, good point. All right, we'll keep the calls going here. We'll go to 585 next. 585, state your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hi, Wade. This is David in Farmington, New York.
David, good to talk to you. This is Zach, though, not Wade. But appreciate you calling.
Oh,
what'd you think of Raw?
I'm sorry.
That's all right, man.
I only caught the last 2 hours, but I'm seeing such a vast improvement in the coherence of what's going on. I mean, from the Riddle, first of all, I'm glad he got his first name back. I'm hearing him calling him Matt, and that segment with Seth Rollins, that interview seemed real. It did not seem contrived. It seemed like real. They got personal, and it just between that and then the mentions of the history. I mean, I know it was a funny segment, but the segment with Edge and Angle and the pictures, like, oh, I'm not going to fall for that again. That was so many years ago, and they brought that back up, and then the history with Kevin Owens. Bringing up the fact that if it were not for Jey Uso, he could have won the Universal title 18 months ago. The performance, again, the performance by, I'm echoing what was said earlier, but the performance with the Usos and Sammy and Kevin Owens, that was wonderful. That was great. They told a great story. And I really got to hand it to Triple H. He is really making these titles mean something again. 1 year ago, I could not tell you who the Intercontinental Champion was. I couldn't tell you who the U.S. Champion was. They seemed lost in the shuffle. Now they're not. They built up that Intercontinental title match between Shinsuke and Gunther. And he built up this women's tag. The women's tag titles were like, they might as well have been the 24/7 title. But now he got that built back up with the tournament. He got interest in it. It seemed like a big deal. And again, I thought, I got to agree with the previous caller, I really had EO and Dakota pegged to win that. But and then my thoughts were possibly, Sasha and Naomi would confront them at Clash at the Castle. But obviously that didn't happen, but it was a nice surprise. And I don't think Triple H is doing anything he's not Vince Russo. He's not going to do something just for the sake of swerving the fans. He's got something in mind for the new champs and something in mind for EO and Dakota. And I'm really interested in that. I'd like to get your thoughts because things did not play out the way I thought they would. How do you think that they are going to eventually reintroduce Naomi and Sasha Banks?
Good question, David. Thank you. Robert, what do you think? I'll throw to you first on that.
I don't think you're going to have to put a ton of thought into it because it's going to be such a big pop and big moment. So basically, it'll be, you can do it. You can do it any couple of ways. You could do it as you were doing it tonight with the or as we thought they would do it with, you know, coming in on just whoever the heels are and bringing them in. There's also I know Naomi doesn't quite fit into this, but let's face it, who's the major star of the two? There's always the four horsewomen angle they can play of some sort. That's kind of where I'm leaning, of where it could reemerge. I haven't put too much thought though into it, and that's kind of what I'm stumbling over my words of the exact spot of where that would have its biggest impact. I don't think it's going to be necessarily like, you know, there's just like a battle royal that one of them debuts in, or they're the mystery person of a tournament. I think it will be meaningful, and it has to be. I just haven't put too much thought into exactly how it's going to wind up.
Yeah, the booking tonight certainly throws that for a loop, because I think you had something really obvious there. If you go with Io Sky and Dakota Kai as champions, whether that was an encounter tonight or at Clash at the Castle or somewhere down the road, you know, with the titles around the waist of the heels, and not only the heel team, but like one of the bigger heel acts on Raw, women's division or not, like that's an easy integration, right? You just bring them back, the champs that never lost the belts, and you go from there, and I think you'll get a good batch of matches out of that. Now you can't really do that. So it tells me either that we're still a couple weeks off from them coming back, and maybe even longer than that, so that WWE can establish Aaliyah and Raquel Rodriguez as champions, and then have them clash with Io Sky and Dakota Kai again. I think that's my thought here as we talk it through. Like, I think they're going to try to get another match and a longer feud with these two teams now. And in the end, Sky and Kai will go over, and then you'll have that reintroduction of Naomi and Sasha. I just think that's the only smooth way to do it at this point, because look, if you bring back Naomi and Sasha, like, and it's one of those things where, we don't care if it's a baby face or if they're heels or, you know, who, what have you. It's just going to be a big moment. They're big stars. Just, you know, put them in the ring and let it happen. They will squash momentum of Rodriguez and Aaliyah. They're just Sasha in particular is just, you know, significantly above those two right now. And they are both baby faces. You're going to have an audience that wants to see them win the titles, or at least challenge for the titles right away. You know, if they have any hope to make Rodriguez and Aaliyah a thing, you can't put them face to face with Sasha Banks and Naomi upon their return, Robert. I think that would just be incredibly counterproductive.
If you're going to have them as baby faces, I mean,
right? Yes. Out of the gate, they have to be right.
It'd be pointless to turn them heel after as random as this would be. That again, we'd be going into that kind of Vince Russo type territory there if we're doing something like this. So it has to be, regardless of what it is, it does, I think, like you said, have to be main event ish. Which right now, I wouldn't say, even though they main evented tonight, Raquel and Aaliyah are quite at that level. It's hard to project though, because I think the women's division, as much as improved over the last couple of weeks, it's still in a bit of flux, and we have to see where it's gonna level out. Luckily, they're a company with a lot of really top heavy on the women's side of things, so they have options. But again, I think this is the place we're going. It's got to be interactions with the horsewomen, or definitely part of the tag title scene. That's the whole basis. That's the whole origin story of them leaving, and so that it just makes so much sense that's what they're back for. And it would add to the title as well, because that would add to, because the only people that seem to ever have cared about that title were Sasha and Naomi, and prior to that, Sasha and Bayley. That's the only time anyone's ever cared about the title was that investment that they put into it. So that's a step. And going back to our other conversation of, you know, how do you build main event programming without Roman Reigns just plastered across the TV all the time?
Yep, Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. You put Sasha in that scene, and Naomi too at this point. I think, you know, she's, for better or worse, you know, the walkout, I think, has made her a bigger star. Like, when she comes back, I think she will be a bigger star. And so, yeah, you have more cards you can play when Roman's not around. Good question, David. Back to you for any follow-up or another comment altogether.
Well, I agree with you on what you were saying there. I think you have to bring in Sasha and Naomi as faces. I think most people at this point, with all of the people that Triple H has already brought back in, with EO and Dakota and Karrion Kross and Johnny Gargano, they're all getting, it's been a very positive reception for those people. And I think people can really side with Sasha and Naomi, because the direction the women's tag titles were going in was just, there was no direction. It was awful, and it was horribly misdone. And so them coming back, they do have to come back as faces. But, I agree. Raquel and Aaliyah, they have a little ways to go before they can get up to a top-tier level. But all around, I've really been impressed with the cohesiveness of the show here lately. The way things seem to be falling in place in the promos, and especially going back to the Riddle and Rollins interview segment, that I was just blown away by how, I mean, you know, Seth still has his, you know, his fake laugh kind of thing, but it just really sounded so much less contrived and so much more believable. Also, going back just a little bit to the footage that they showed of the parking lot confrontation, that seemed very real too, because it wasn't just, a cameraman just happens to be out in the parking lot, you know, filming the arrival of Seth Rollins, and they get into it. No, it looked like, you know, a fan just caught it on their cell phone and they broadcast it, and it looked. It's just little bitty things like that, little tiny things like that that mean so much, that make so much of a difference in the presentation of the show.
Yeah. Let's take this opportunity, Robert, and talk about that, the Riddle, Seth Rollins stuff from that video that David's talking about to, you know, the split screen interview that happened later in the show. I thought the video was really a unique way to kind of continue to capture the feud between those guys. It's not something that you can do every single week. They shouldn't do it every single week, but I think in this instance, it worked. It was unique. It was a unique twist on kind of that type of storytelling. And it wasn't like overly produced. It felt like a fan recording a video of people like watch it walking into the arena. I thought that was really effective. And I thought the interview segment was effective too. I mean, I think what they got across is that they have a very personal feud between the two of them. And so I think you can make the argument that maybe they went a little too far. But you know, again, as long as it's not habitual, I think it can be effective in certain circumstances. And I think given what they set up here between those two, it made sense to quote unquote go there, just given how they've built this thing. So I was a big fan of what they did tonight with those two guys. Robert, what about you?
Yeah, as was I, because I think like what you're getting at, it wasn't gratuitous in the way that they that they presented. It wasn't like, ooh, they said that on the PG product. You know, that's every time we've gotten any profanity in the last 12 years. That's basically been the reaction. This, again, just felt like more of the flow of things. They weren't just trading catchphrases as they were going on there. It felt like a toned down version of when you watch, you know, sometimes there'll be a boxing hype or a UFC hype, and like ESPN will have, you know, both guys in the mirror, and they kind of do their thing. And the parking lot thing all the way around, I think, really worked. because it wasn't just it wasn't so generically labeled too as like earlier in the day the way they do these things before. And again, like you said, the coincidence of wow, there just happened to be a camera right there and all that good stuff. This was just the care of it was taking a little more. And again, even though it was still kind of like far away the way it was shot, just those little details make things matter, make things count. I would say on both guys' characters as well, they're less, how do you say, like, you know, flanderized in that it's not – yes, Seth is still doing the Sethy things, but it's part of his character. It is not the entirety of his existence. You say things like Riddle's no longer just an idiot the whole time. He's still silly. He's still goofy. He has his personality, but that's not his true defining characteristic. And I didn't think they could get there necessarily without Randy. I was very concerned when all this started going. I think Seth though too, his last year or so has just been. I don't know if it's underrated because I think people are aware of it, but there's a certain point where even with this character that was way over the top, he started to make it work at some point. And now that the booking has got better, I think it's all kind of rose to the top with the direction that he's going.
That's really, really well said. And I agree. Riddle in particular, I think he needed that. When you watch him now, I think you're watching a guy who, look, I don't know that he's going to be a guy that you strap the company to. There's not a lot of guys like that out there, but is he a guy that can be at the top of your cards and be a babyface that the audience wants to see and wants to see win? I think absolutely he can be that in this form. I think the other kind of like just emphasis on the weed stuff and the bro stuff, like there was a ceiling there. Like he could be like this lovable kind of sympathetic guy in that role, and that, you know, could get him far, but I don't think it ever was going to put him over the top. But man, if we continue to see him showcase the ability to balance that natural personality that he has along with the intensity and kind of the competitive spirit that we know he has too, given his fight background and his MMA background, like that I think is very much a recipe for Riddle to do big things with the company. I mean, the guy moves merch. He's got a good thing going with Randy Orton. They can always go back to that when Orton comes back. But until then, he's on a trajectory now that I think is a lot more healthy for his long-term benefit to the company than it was just, you know, a month ago. And I think for Seth Rollins, he's really an interesting case study because he has quietly had a really good year, and not just from the perspective of, okay, he's figured out his character, but and he's had good matches, and you know he's been in main events. Like, yes, that's all true, but people that he's worked with this year, like they're like starting to be made guys. You know, Cody Rhodes, yes, different circumstance, big WrestleMania surprise. But he had a three-match arc with Seth Rollins and came out on the other side looking better than he did going in. And I think you're seeing the same thing here with Riddle, and that's really valuable. I don't know, Robert, if Seth is going to get a run with the world title again or be the guy again in WWE, but, man, he's valuable in this role too.
Yeah, he reminds me of a role that we just haven't had in a long time. The role that at one point, like the Benoits and the Jerichos and the Eddies and the Mick Foley always served as basically the guy you got to go through before you're in the main event. And because he has that wrestling ability that he's never lost, he's not what he was in, obviously, in that post-Shield era where he was just amazing. You know, he doesn't quite have that, but I think he has enough credibility. And he, you know, he is a modern day incarnation of a lot of those guys I was just mentioning. That, yeah, he's the guy you got to go through before you have the big push. And he's perfect for that role because, as you said, there's a benefit to feuding with him. It's not feuding with Baron Corbin where you're a much colder character after the fact. This is an entirely different deal. And I think it's been a long time coming for WWE to potentially find someone to fit that role where he can challenge for a title and you take him serious as challenging for a title. You don't view him as a loser in that way. It's just not necessarily where his focus will always be. I do think there's something unfinished with him and Roman that does need to play out. That doesn't mean he gets the title from Roman, but I do think we need that feud just a little less herky-jerky, as every time they've kind of gone to it in the Roman heel era, it's never quite clicked in the way that it has potential to do. So I think that is in the future more so than an actual title run, especially if there's only going to be one world title for the near future.
Yeah, and he brings it up too, Seth, which I think is, you know, important, like, to talk about. Just conceptually, I think that's important in general. I think you want to have your top guys regularly talking about the world title. Like, I think that's so important. And for a long, long time, that was missing on these shows. For frankly, it's missing in AEW and other promotions too. It's not just a WWE thing. But I think it's so effective when you have these guys, just even if it's just a one-line sentence of, Roman, I've still got my eye on you, still coming for the world title. Like, that, it gives credibility to the title. It kind of talks about your mission in the company on the periphery. And so that way you can always go back and play that card later on. And there's a built-in history there of said character talking about that. So I think that's really important. They do have unfinished business. That'll be fun to watch that play out. But I guess, you know, going into this pay-per-view on Saturday, like, I think they've been able to take a Riddle-Rollins feud that I don't think anybody really could pinpoint exactly when the feud started. And now it feels like a really big personal grudge match. And I think that's on the shoulders of the booking, Robert, and I think it's on the shoulders of the two guys, you know, that are doing the work.
Right, and I still think it needed this week, though, because even yesterday on my show, we were kind of just running down the card, just like, you know, look at the Wikipedia page and what's coming up, and mm-hmm. and it still didn't feel like it had quite the juice. Like, it felt like there still needed to be one more match added on this card. Not added, but that was that other piece that made it more than just a house show with a flashy main event. And I think now they accomplished that tonight. Like, that's where they got to tonight.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's keep rolling with callers here. 610, and then we'll go to 914 after that. 610, you're up. Take your name and where you're calling from.
This is Matt. I'm from Wilmington, Delaware. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good, Matt. Good. Thanks for calling. What did you think of Money in the Rock?
I liked it, man. I've been liking all the shows since Triple H took over. What I really liked this week, it seemed like for about 5 weeks or so in a row, we were starting the show off with a brawl right out of the gate. And it was nice to get away from that this week and get it, you know, into a nice little match. I also liked how the matches themselves weren't all super long. You know, they were concise and to the point, but still good, you know, all the same. I also was very pleasantly surprised by the fact that Raquel and Aaliyah came out as the winners, as the tag champs. And with the two of them as the tag champs, I do see a path. You know, people are wondering how Sasha and Naomi are going to come back and get into this. And, you know, their last two matches, Aaliyah's gotten knocked out of the match for a good portion of it, if not almost the entire match. So I kind of see maybe some dissension between the two of them down the road. And at the house shows, been seeing Baszler and Rousey tagging together a lot of times against Raquel and Aaliyah. So that could be their first challenge from the heel side on SmackDown once they get done with Baszler and Liv Morgan at Clash of the Castle. And should Baszler and Rousey defeat Raquel and Aaliyah, then that would sort of bring a little bit more emphasis onto the women's tag titles. And that could then bring back Sasha and Naomi. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked earlier, Robert, about, you know, main event level stuff for Sasha and Naomi when they come back. I mean, And that certainly would be it. I mean, I think that would certainly qualify, you know, a feud with Ronda and Shayna.
Absolutely. And another piece that's unfinished from Ronda's initial run, they had the match with Sasha. It was very good, but like, it was such a throwaway on the way to get to WrestleMania that year that you would like to see that be much proper. And then with the direction of Ronda's character anyway, right now, I think that would solve some of the problems that we discussed earlier, that, you know, the eclipse of Sasha and Naomi coming back would achieve. And also, I think, I mean, basically the only good thing Ronda's done since returning is her little, like, couple-week storyline with Raquel. So I think that does tie a lot of things together. I don't know if that's the direction they're going in necessarily, but I think it would tie a lot of these threads together if they went in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bottom line is you want to have – like, you got to – like, if you want the women's tag titles to mean something, just like anything else, you got to put some heat behind them, which means you got to have some stars wrestling for them. And, you know, I think it's going to take a bit to kind of just recalibrate everybody's mindset on the women's tag titles. I think if you're sitting backstage right now and you're Paul Levesque, you're probably like, man, I wish that match could have delivered a little bit more. But, you know, hey, you win some, you lose some. The bottom line is you have to put stars in place if you want to make these belts mean anything. And I think, you know, I think Ronda Rousey is going to clash with Becky Lynch at some point, but there's a long time between now and WrestleMania and a quick feud with the tag team champs that may work. That may work, Matt. Back to you.
Another thing is that I do agree with first the gentleman who was saying he thinks Drew's going to win at Clash of the Castle. And it's just a gut feeling I have. But, you know, back at day one, if Roman had not gotten COVID and he did face Brock Lesnar, he may have lost that match. And then they may have rematched at WrestleMania. And then and maybe won there, and we wouldn't have this long reign. We don't really know that. And I just feel like this is the time where Drew's going to win. And then after that, I don't know what they're going to do. But I really do see that as a possibility there. I also think that the Zayn and Owens is moving in a direction where they're going to feud with the Usos and possibly dethrone them too. And just the whole Clash of the Castle card. The other thing that the outcome of the tag match did is it allowed the 6-woman tag match at Clash of the Castle. Whoever wins that match, you're not automatically, degrading the women's tag titles if Bianca's team wins, because you're not beating the tag champs, and you don't have to. I guess you don't have to choose between beating a team with the tag champs on it or a team with the women's Raw champion on it, and I think that's a good thing. I don't know what the outcome's going to be, but I think it's probably good that Sky and Kai aren't the tag champs going into that match. What do you think about that?
That's definitely fair argument. I mean, I think it's a fair argument for sure. You know, and you know, you have to take into account too that there was a handful of injuries to different teams in this tournament. So maybe the plan was different. I just err on the side of, you know, If Sky or Dakota Kai, Robert, does the job in that 6-woman tag and Belair is the one that does it, like, you really, I don't know that you're losing all that much. She's the world champion. You want her to get the win. I still would have played the card for tonight to put over the team that you care more about. But, I mean, it's a valid point. What do you think, Robert?
I mean, I think it's sound logic given, like, what you have to do maybe tonight. If that's the direction you're going in. But then I think you just you position things a little bit different along the way. Now, you mentioned the injuries. I mean, this thing got changed up so many times. People couldn't get into countries. Like, it was a whole mess. in that respect, all the way down the board. And that's the thing, though. Like we're saying with these arguments, sometimes it is pro wrestling. Like you don't have to be always in the situation that you're in. So I don't.
Right.
Yeah, like again, it's fine logic for, you know, getting there. And I agree. Like, don't pin champions. Like, let's keep that as a general rule. But as you're saying, like, Bianca, who I think is someone who maybe has suffered a little bit in the Triple H regime. Mm-hmm. She doesn't feel as hot as she did before. And I think that actually goes to show how much the star power of, like, Becky really commands to that division. And then having her and Sasha both out of the picture at the same time really, really does that level of damage. So again, I get the logic for the one night, but I would just rather just not go there, period, to not have to make that decision.
Yeah. Yep. Me too. Matt, any final points for us tonight, man?
Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff they did kind of made a lot of the stuff at the Clash of the Castle better. It's already been mentioned with the Riddle and Rollins stuff they did tonight. Like, now I actually really care about that match. Before, it was just a match between one of my favorite heels and one of my favorite, if not my favorite, babyface character. And the stuff that Rollins said to Riddle about his wife and all that stuff really added some heat to it and made me really want to see those two guys go at it. And I felt like that was missing prior to this. And then they also added the Judgment Day versus Rey and Edge match, which to me, at first glance, it's like, what else can they do with Judgment Day versus Mysterio and or Edge? But with having Dominic in the corner of Edge and Mysterio, and they, you know, we saw backstage where Rey was telling his son that Edge is like family and all this, and Dominic didn't really seem too keen on it. I wonder if this is where we're finally going to see the Dominic turn at Clash at the Castle, because we, you know, Ripley's obviously going to be in Judgment Day's corner, but we've seen the female interference and, you know, the male's not going to hit the female stuff over and over and over and over again. And the only thing new I can really see happening between Judgment Day and the other two is if we have Dominic turn on his father. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, boy, here's the thing. I've said on this show and other shows and a handful of different things I've written that, hey, this is going to be the time that Dominic turns on his dad. There's a lot to that, in my opinion. And I think first and foremost, I am not sure, Robert, that Dominic can pull off being a heel. You know, I just don't know. And he'll be surrounded, if he joins Judgment Day, by some talented folks, Finn Balor, you know, Damian Priest, Rhea Ripley. I think they know how to get over as heels, and they're starting to. But I just have not seen anything from Dominic that tells me that he has the acting range and the character range and the charisma to play that role opposite his dad. Effectively, because when you go that route, I mean, man, that's personal, you know, like father and son fighting each other, like that's big. And I think you really, for that to work and be viable on TV, you really have to be able to execute that story to a T. Rey, I don't have any worries there, but I'm not sure Dominic can pull it off. Take that point first, Robert. Where are you at on Dominic?
Yeah, that was going to be what my take was as we were hearing the call. It's just like, from a storytelling perspective, it would kind of make sense. It would be a logical way to go, but who is it to execute it? And I'll say this, even like even on the Rey side of things, like the Rey is very good at producing sympathy. I think he's maybe one of the best of all time at being able to do that and to get you to empathize with him during matches. I don't know you can pull that off in this situation. Like, I just don't know if the pieces are there for that turn to really matter at this point. I think it could have done it earlier when Dominic was looking like a better prospect than what he has turned out to be at this point. I think there was a little more currency in it at that point. And then going to the final point, as you mentioned, I think the Judgment Day really is, and in their feud with Edge, it's really all about the promos. Like that's what this whole thing. Once they got Edge out of the Judgment Day when he was cutting those really weird promos with them, Damian Priest has got better, even though he's got that kind of weird delivery. Rhea is pretty good each week. Finn has sort of found a new voice with the promos doing this. I don't know, like with Dominic, it's like the guy can't really cut great promos, and he's not like this imposing, intimidating figure that you could kind of hide in there as kind of your enforcer. So I don't know what role he would serve as a member of the Judgment Day. So if I'm going to go that direction, I think it's just a pure betrayal of Rey, and then maybe you spin it off there. I don't like the father-son story. I don't like the sibling rivalry storylines necessarily if they're not Brett and Owen. I just generally think they don't work. Because Brett and Owen worked because it was this guy just being the most annoying little brother ever and being so petulant about everything. That's why that worked, where these other ones, you know, throughout history, I just don't – like, I've never liked Matt versus Jeff. Matt versus Jeff has never worked in any context, any era, any decade. And I think this could be, you know, kind of similar. Maybe as a way, and this sounds harsh, but to get Dominic off of TV, you know, to get him some seasoning, maybe that it would be worth it for that reason alone. But it's just, yeah, I'm so low on Dominic at the current time that putting a lot of investment into him, I don't know, is the best use of everyone's time.
Yeah, and I'm trying to find the right words to not sound totally disrespectful of Dominic, but you know, he just has not shown the range needed to pull off something like that. And I think, like I said, with this story, you really need to be able to pull it off. Otherwise, I think it looks bad and looks minor league, and it just doesn't work. Now, the flip side of that is, at this point, I kind of think Dominic needs a heel turn to kind of just reinvigorate him as a wrestler on Raw week to week. Like, I mean, how much further can he go in this current iteration, you know? So it's a real catch-22 there with him. It's like you have this obvious card you can play to get him to the heel side of things. But, man, you're just – no, I don't think anybody can be sure whether or not he can pull it off. And I think that just means that, man, maybe, you know, he needs some seasoning. Like, I don't think he can be Rey Mysterio's son for the entirety of his career. Like, I think he's got to – be able to find, I mean, and even if he's feuding with Rey, like that's still there. Like Rey is still his crutch. That can't be a long-term thing for him. If he wants to actually carve out a space in this business for himself, he has to start developing, you know, just as his own character. And we just haven't seen that enough yet. After starting off in the company really, really hot. I mean, with the SummerSlam match against Seth Rollins, I mean, that's big, but I don't know that I can say that he's really grown all that much, Robert, from now until then.
No, because they, like, there it was like, wow, like this kid's got potential. And now they've sort of, I don't know how to quite pronounce the word. I'm thinking of infantilize him so much that, like, this, you know, this like 26-year-old guy that's like 6 foot tall is, you know, treated as the same Dominic that Eddie and Rey were fighting for custody over. It doesn't work. It doesn't work as a character. It does him no help from the booking perspective. And then he just doesn't, as you said, doesn't quite have that range in that way. I really think immediately, you know, shotgunning him to just being like a son was such a mistake in retrospect. If that's all they were going to do, if it was never, it never moved on from like the Kane Velasquez storyline that they had back.
Oh my
years.
God.
Like we're still stuck. Like Kane already killed a guy in the time since we've been there. He didn't actually kill him. You get the effect. Like that's how much has happened. Kane's in prison now. And Dominic is still like the guy that needs to be protected by his 5'2" dad.
Oh, that's the quote of the week right there for sure. And it's only Monday, but I can give it to you. That's the quote of the
please,
week.
Please don't sue me. I know he didn't actually kill a guy. Please don't sue me, anyone.
Yes, no. We know. I mean, with Dominic, it's like I said, you gotta kind of do something with him at this point, right? And I think the best way to go about this with him is just you kind of have this moment between Ray and Dominic in the ring, and Dominic goes, "Hey, Dad, I appreciate all you've done for me, but it's time I gotta go out on my own," you know? And then he's on his own, and Ray's separate. You don't have him cross paths. If he stays babyface, great. If he turns heel, that's great, but it's not within the confines of a Ray Dominic feud. Like that to me is the avenue you take at this point. Maybe it's a run in NXT. Like, I don't know, but I think you have to get him away from his dad. He's got to be able to stand on his own. Matt, any final words for us tonight? And then we're going to try to hit one more caller here before we open up the emails.
Now I'm just excited to finally see the IC title get defended on a pay-per-view for the first time since last WrestleMania. And as far as the Dominic turn thing goes, I think Rhea Ripley could assist with him a little bit, 'cause she's not doing anything in the women's division at all. So it would give her some purpose there. But other than that, I got let you guys get on with your show, get on to some other callers and stuff. And thanks for having me. Go VIP.
Thanks, Matt. Really appreciate it. Yeah, great call. Make sure to call again, man. We'll go to 914. 914, thanks for holding. We know you've been on there for a long time. Appreciate it. 914, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Zach, Rob. This is Brad in New York. How are you both?
Good, Brad. How are you?
Cool, man. Hey, so a couple things. You know, I watched Raw tonight. I did walk away for like certain periods of like a minute or two, but I did not even know until your last caller, Matt, I believe, had mentioned it, that Edge and Mysterio was a match at Clash at the Castle. They must have not really emphasized it that much, other than like maybe in a quick graphic or something, because I really did not see it tonight. I mean, I did see Edge obviously come out with Angle, and he was showing him all the signs and the pictures and everything, but I don't know. It just, they really did not emphasize that match was happening, that was booked tonight. And normally you say, oh, it's been made official. I mean, did I miss something there? Or I guess I did, but.
Yeah. I mean, if you walked away for 1 second or 2 seconds, like you probably did miss it. 'Cause it was a passing, kind of a passing comment backstage with Ray and Dominic, where Dominic's kind of like telling Ray, "Hey, I thought this was a family thing. I thought you and I were going to take on Judgment Day." And then, you know, Ray just said, "Hey, I need Edge. I need somebody with more experience." Boom. I mean, I don't even think they flashed a graphic, Robert. Did you remember seeing anything? I think that was like the only kind of time they alluded to that match.
No, they did a few times, I think, later in the show when they were running down the card. Right. It did, but to the broader point that both of you are making, it did kind of like blend in to the background of everything that was going on with the Kurt Angle stuff and everything else.
Do you like what they did that with Edge tonight, Robert? I mean, in terms of just kind of keeping the Judgment Day Edge thing on a simmer.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was fine. I mean, there was nothing really extra added. I thought last week's presentation was much more effective. I feel like you could have just cut it off last week, and you would have gotten basically everything that you needed to get from all of this.
Yeah. Brad, back to you.
So listen, I know that I'm not trying to make this all about Clash at the Castle, but obviously the purpose of this Raw is to get us to Clash at the Castle. I personally have a wedding on Saturday afternoon, and I was really looking forward to watching this Clash at the Castle that starts at 4:30 p.m. Eastern. How long do you think this pay-per-view will be? Only because it is a little bit of a strange pay-per-view. Like, it seems very, very thin, the card, to me. Like, you have no Lashley, no Theory, no celebrities, no Lesnar, no Charlotte Flair, no Usos, no Becky, Ronda, Miz. You know, it's kind of a strange pay-per-view in a way with, you know, I mean, I was going to say, what is it, five matches? Or I guess now it's six, I think. Maybe this is the fifth, but it doesn't seem like this is going to be for a stadium show with 70,000 people. It doesn't seem to me like this is a built-up card like you'd expect out of a SummerSlam or something. You know, it just doesn't seem like that to me. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think shows are built up differently, and I think this one, in particular, is very, very main event heavy. You know, it reminds me of those, you know, Floyd Mayweather boxing cards where you had undercard fights, but not really like anything significant because it didn't matter. Mayweather was going to sell the pay-per-view. In this instance, it's similar in that McIntyre and Roman Reigns is the match. It's the biggest match. It's getting treated as the biggest match. And that match is doing the business of the show. So it is a one-match show in that regard. But I do think that there's stuff below that works at this point. I mean, I think the Edge Ray thing, I think that's fine for where it is in the card. Riddle and Rollins, big step forward today. That's important. You know, Liv and Shayna Baszler, that kind of is what it is. And the women's six-man kind of is what it is. But I'm a firm believer in you don't need everybody on all these pay-per-views. The show, I think, is going to be better, Robert, at, you know, a smooth 3 hours with five matches. Less than that, that's fine by me too.
Yeah, cool. It's hard to handicap. I mentioned earlier how I said I kind of feel like a house show, but with a really big main event. And so I think I'm alluding to the same thing. Like, yeah, there's actually not a ton on this card, which is a little surprising because of how long it's been since they've been on pay-per-view. You would think that maybe they would try to blow this out, but they've gone just all in on the main event and on, as we talked about with Riddle and Rollins, going on there. Length, I think it's actually going to be interesting to watch because I don't know what this is. As you mentioned, is this, you know, where is this between a Saudi show and like a tentpole event? Like I can't really handicap that because we haven't had a lot of precedent for this, or even, you know, like the Australian show they did a couple years ago when you started watching it, and you realize, no, this is a house show. Now, unlike those Saudi shows, though, there's not like stupid matches that me and Zach are booking just for the fun of it to relive our youth. Like that's not happening on this card. So I think every match is probably going to get as much time as it needs. And you know, six matches, some multi-person matches. I think, you know, that Gunther and Sheamus will take up a lot of it. Riddle and Rollins, those three singles matches will take up the bulk of it. I would say, though, it's probably on a little bit of the shorter end, but you can never discount anything because that watch time is so valuable to them.
Yeah. Yep. That is.
Yeah.
Brad, any other thoughts for us tonight, man?
I mean, just one other thought. It really wasn't the most important segment of the show, but Chad Gable was incredibly funny tonight. Like, he was like a stand-up comedy act tonight. He was so good. And the match was actually really good with the Street Profits and the Alpha Academy, but I really like to see – I enjoyed seeing Alpha Academy getting back some of the shine that they really have lost since, you know, those tag team championships to RK-Bro, because I do think that they have something good going on. Like, I don't think they're just a throwaway tag team type of thing. Like, I think that they're a little bit more than that, and I love seeing them with Angle and you know, in that spot and kind of getting a little bit of, you know, kind of the rub off of that. And I just thought, again, Gable was so, so funny, man. And that really is kind of all I have to say. Not too much tonight, but thanks for taking my call. And I just wanted to see what you guys thought of that segment.
Yeah, Brad, well, we'll take that. I'm glad you brought that up. I've got a note on it because I wanted to make sure we talked about it. But, Brad, thanks very much for calling, man. I really appreciate it. Good stuff. Yeah, I thought Chad Gable was great tonight too, Robert. I mean, and mm-hmm. You know, there's a place for that on a three-hour Monday Night Raw if it's balanced. I think it kind of was an ode to Vince McMahon Raws a little bit. But at the same time, if you have the right guy doing it, you can pull it off. I thought maybe we'd start the show tonight, you know, just shushing each other for a bit, but I thought better of it. Do you – like, where are you at on that team? Because I think they were a team created very much to help get RK-Bro over, right? I mean, I think they were a good heel foil for them, and I think it worked in the end, and they were a great – they were just a great kind of foil. But now they're kind of floating around. You can use them for segments like this. They can have good matches with anybody, but they're kind of in that middle ground of like, they're not being positioned as serious threats, but they're not like total jobbers either. They do have value to the show. Where are you taking Alpha Academy at this point?
Yeah, I think their act as it is fine. I do think they just need to, like, the scenery around them needs to freshen up a little bit, and that would help. That's why tonight I think was actually a bit of a return to form, because you had like another variable with Kurt Angle being in there, and then being able to play off of him, and then I thought like Corey Graves, you know, all the Pittsburgh stuff, Corey Graves was just completely in on everything during the segment. So I thought all of that worked, but then like, they also then had to go with the Street Profits, who I kind of feel are in the same sort of category as talented, you know, talented team, individuals that are very good, but just kind of need a bit of a reset. And they haven't got that in this new era, because this new era doesn't those type of characters don't really fit. So they have both of those teams have to kind of find their zone in the new WWE landscape. So I think the scenery around them has to change, because again, the act is good, and it'll stand out more if that scenery changes, where we are in a more serious product, if they can be a little bit of that levity. That's when levity in wrestling really works, when it's not happening every couple of seconds. There's not that, and then there's a 24/7 segment, and then we're, you know, making fun of someone for being short. Like, as long as we're not just doing that over and over again, people who are actually funny the way, you know, both of them are, it can work, but I do think some of the things around them need to shift a little bit.
Yeah. Really well said. Real quick on the Street Profits. I thought Montez, let me start over. I kind of put them so far in a similar category with Riddle, as far as their tone of their characters shifting a bit to more serious. And I thought that was on display tonight with the way Montez Ford just talked about that, you know, the match they were going to have. Like, he got super serious. I thought he looked like a, you know, he's looked like a star for a while, but man, something popped off the screen for me with him tonight that, you know, you're like, man, all right, this guy and that team can go places if they wanted to with this new kind of tweak to their gimmick, much like a Riddle. Did that stand out to you as well?
Not in particular, but it just tonight could be something that I just didn't notice. Overall, though, that assessment of Montez in particular, that's something that tends to stick out on a lot of these Raws, is kind of the disconnect, I think, from the promo to the match with him. Like, they seem to be two different worlds sometime. I think he's poised for a push at some point. I don't know if there's necessarily space for him right now. So that's why maybe the Street Profits thing is still the way to go until you can get, you know, hopefully it's not like a Big E situation where you wait too long and then, you know, something unfortunate or, you know, the circumstances don't quite work out, but they do have something there. And again, I'm a little bored with them as a tag team act at the moment.
Yeah. No, fair enough. All right, we're going to wrap up the caller portion of the show right there, and Robert, we'll get to some emails here in a second. But Robert, before we do, you have a show on the PW Torch Daily Cast. It's something that everybody out there absolutely needs to check out on a regular basis. You guys do some really great work. So talk about the show. Talk about your work for the Torch. You know, the floor is yours.
Right. So every Monday night, as part of the PW Torch Daily Cast, myself and Rick Monsey, we produce MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Now, what it is a show that's mostly about the world of mixed martial arts, but we like to examine it through a pro wrestling lens. We like to take the approach that we would take on a show like this and apply it to MMA. So instead of getting into such detail about, you know, the actual stuff between the bell, we're talking about that stuff, but we're also talking about the aesthetics. We're talking about how the broadcast looked. We're talking, you know, in no uncertain terms, that MMA and sports as a whole is an entertainment product and what that can lead to. And then we also like to sneak in a little bit of pro wrestling coverage at the end of every show. I have a feeling next week's show is going to be like 90% pro wrestling and 10% the historic MMA card from France. So that's generally the flavor of the show every Monday night, PW Torch Daily Cast Lineup, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans.
It's a great show, guys. Make sure you check it out. You can subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast for free and get Robert's show as well as a whole bunch of others that I think you'll enjoy, especially if you like this show. Robert, let's get some emails here. First one is from Dave in Massachusetts. Says, thanks for the great content as usual. I just wanted to quickly pop in and make a comment about Raw. I was watching tonight and was pleasantly surprised by the Seth and Riddle interview. I'm not a huge fan of usually real-life storylines, but the intensity by Riddle sucked me right in. I usually tend to go to bed around 10 unless something on Raw really piques my interest. I was about to turn off the TV, and then Sami and the Bloodline came on. I was so hyped from the interview and what Sami and the Usos have been doing that I figured I could not turn it off now. Kevin Owens came out, and here I am watching a match between KO and Jey Uso, because how could you not watch a match between those two? Raw used to have so many bleak points that it was easy to check out of, but now there's actually stuff that makes you keep the TV on. I, for one, am happy. Also, I love the handshake between Sami and Jimmy. Yes, that was pretty funny. Thanks, Dave. We talked about the Seth Riddle stuff and KO, but as far as like the freshness, Robert, of the matches that we've seen lately. Even tonight, we haven't talked about it much, if at all, but you had Bobby Lashley and The Miz out there for, you know, a good 10 minutes or so. You had this Kevin Owens-Jey Uso match. Like, the matches in the Paul Levesque era so far, to me, have seemed infinitely more fresh and unique than the stuff that we saw, you know, the front half of 2022. It's just night and day as far as that goes.
It is, because you're not getting a different version of the same match every week and then still wondering why you need to care at the pay-per-view. And yeah. So you're getting variations. You're getting the dance partners switching around with KO and the Usos. But no, it really works much better in this way, because here's the thing. Like I said before, I don't really like long matches on Raw. It's not really my thing. I like them more in a pay-per-view setting. But part of that also comes from the fact that you get a lot of the same matches a lot when I'm making that comment. If you're getting a lot of these different matches, this is something I thought early AEW actually did really well. When they would build these matches that aren't really pay-per-view matches, they're TV-level matches, but they're still unique and interesting matches to watch. And I think they've done a really good job, particularly like AJ Styles in the last couple of weeks has just had a nice little run of being you know, not at the top of the card, but being able to just be AJ Styles and do all of his things, because he's had the fresher opponents. He's not, you know, bogged down in some Omos feud for eternity. So those little things, I think, add up to something that you're willing to just be much more forgiving of other things. Because, like, there's still stuff on the show that's, like, weird. Like, I still don't know what's going on with the Dexter Lumis thing. Like, that thing still just kind of, like, it just feels unnecessary at this point. And there's still stuff in the women's division that still doesn't quite work for me. But whenever they're doing all these other things that make the show a little more enjoyable, then you can forgive, overlook, or be more patient with those things. Kind of, you know, the thing was happening in reverse when the product was driving you so nuts that even stuff that was pretty frivolous, you just start picking apart, because that's just the mood that you're put in while you're watching the product.
Yeah, no, it's great analysis. And I think the other thing it does is with these fresh matchups that you're seeing is that, you know, it shows and proves out the point that you can build wrestling feuds by not having the same guys encounter each other week to week. Like in this instance, tonight, for example, you had KO against Jey Uso, right? And that not only did it set the table for potential KO Sami against Usos thing, because it was effective directly in that regard, but it also helped heat up the Roman story and the Drew story. Like it had a residual effect on that. Even the Lumis thing, you know, you had The Miz wrestling Bobby Lashley, you know, and that match got a finish that helped another feud. You know, you don't always have to have these guys and these women like next to each other every single week to pull off these stories. And I think for, you know, the last 2-3 years of Vince McMahon booking the show, it was like, all right, if Corbin and McIntyre are feuding together, well, they're going to be in this tag match and they're going to be in this backstage segment. And then they're going to tossed each other matches. And then by the time you get to the pay-per-view, it's like you said, who really – does anybody really care anymore?
Almas and Mysterio was the one for me that they just
yes.
every week.
Oh, my God. Yes. Right. But it's like you don't have to go about it that way. And I think, you know, it makes for fresher television to not. And, you know, we'll have to see what Triple H can pull off, because, you run out of talent at some point. But that's his job, is to keep talent fresh and keep talent hot and make sure your top stars have people to work with. Like that's part of the gig. But this has been a good start. And I think something that, you know, is certainly, you know, connecting with Dave to bring him back into the fold. We have an email from Joe from New York here that is a little bit on the other side of the coin here. He says, "Hey guys, couple thoughts on Raw. The Kurt Angle segment was a Vince McMahon comedy segment. I see small signs of the Vince style of booking returning. One was Kurt Angle tonight, and Drew came out with a sword Friday night on SmackDown. Never think the owner of the company doesn't have input in how things go and how people are presented. One other thing, WWE showed Connor's cure tonight and how the foundation raised $4.5 million. It would have been nice to hear WWE reached in their own pocket and matched the $4.5 million raised and put up $4.5 million of their own money. WWE played that commercial talking about Connor's cure instead of patting themselves on the back. I would have liked to hear that they reached in their pocket and put up some money." Joe from New York. So a little bit of a different perspective. And I guess, Joe, my kind of comment back on that is, you know, there is a time, as I said earlier, there's a time and a place for that stuff on a wrestling show. Like like the Kurt Angle type segment tonight is not the first time that this has been done in a professional wrestling show. Steve Austin sang with a guitar backstage, you know, and he wore a cowboy hat backstage in vignettes. Like it happens even when there's a good product on the television week to week. It just has to happen with the right people, and it has to happen with other things around it that protect it a little bit. You can't have that segment go into 24/7, go into something with Dana Brooke, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very much the full big picture. So I disagree on that part of your note, just because I think that there's a place in any wrestling company. I mean, AEW has, you know, weird arcade segments. Like it happens. It's a part of professional wrestling. And as far as the Connor Secure go, yeah, like, you know, I mean, WWE's, you know, Robert, they're a corporation, you know. Corporations do this kind of thing, pat themselves on the back. In the end, $4.5 million is great for that organization. Of course, it'd be nice to see that match. I just, you know, I just don't know if that's going to happen, you know, Robert, but over to you.
Yeah, on that last point, that was going to be the kind of point I was going to make. WWE, when they do their self-congratulatory charity stuff, they're actually no different than all these other companies. They're not the only – they're like, look at what the NFL does
with their
charity stuff. Like, it's on the same level. The thing that made that, I think, uniquely Vince is they have zero subtlety, whereas, like, the NFL one, you have to do about 3 seconds of thinking. Whereas, like, the, you know, WWE is, we do charity. We are good. You should watch us. That's basically how the WWE one comes across. That's why it engenders the rage that I think it does, because they take the subtext out, which in some ways might be a little more admirable if they would just admit to that that's what they're doing. Whereas these other companies, like, I don't, you know, it's a whole lot of time. Like, I don't think there's, like, the good charitable company versus the bad charitable. I generally think let's face it, it's a way to write off on your taxes. That's what that stuff is, and it's PR. So that I don't think we can expect for it to change. The funny stuff, yeah, it's not only is it a part of wrestling, but it's also part of the WWE brand, and you can't just forsake that altogether. Like, WWE, for all of its problems, one of the most watched television products on, you know, in TV history and current TV. Like, it is still something that people enjoy to a level. Like, you can't completely ignore that. So that's a little bit of what people kind of expect in the wrestling, even if you're trying to wean them off, which I think maybe the idea there. There's going to be some residuals. I think it would be more herky jerky, and I said this since the takeover, if they were do like what Eric Bischoff had planned to do with the Big Bang concept, where they're just completely rebooting and restarting everything. So you couldn't do that. And again, there's nothing wrong with funny in wrestling, as long as it's done with the right people at the right time, people that can actually pull it off, which again, Kurt Angle and Chad Gable are on that list of people who can, you know, historically and currently who can pull that off. So I think there is a place for it, as long as it's done good and doesn't hurt other parts of your show. But ultimately, and you said this too, Zach, it's really just about the tone of the show. It's never really about one or two individual segments. Like some of the issues that a lot of people are having with AEW at the moment, I think has a lot to do with the tone of the show, the overarching tone. So when your overarching tone is just the silliness and the frivolity and all that, then it just devalues so much of the show, because that just kind of becomes what you're watching and what you're watching for. And if that's not really what you like, it creates that dissonance as you're watching it. So I think it's all about perspective. I could see, though, if you want that change right now, I could see being frustrated. And at the end of the day, too, it's always going to be a 3-hour show. So right. It's always going to come with that handicap. And that is going to be, now that Vince is out of the picture, that is the thing that'll kind of undergird, I think, every piece of criticism that you can give Raw specifically.
Yeah, really, really well said. And, you know, the thing tonight with Kurt Angle, you know, we didn't spend too much time on him. What I in some levels, I'm like, man, you know, Kurt Angle can do that stuff well. I mean, he always has been able to do that stuff well. You know, he's also this just lethal wrestler that, you know, we don't see that, you know, owed to Kurt Angle very often. I was kind of okay, Robert, with how they went with him tonight, you know, because I don't know what else you could really do. You know, I don't know that I want to see him taking bumps out there. So, you know, lean into this stuff and I guess take it home, right?
Yeah, I was kind of a whole bag of emotions with the Kurt Angle thing because, well, one, this happened when I was watching it. My wife walked in and said, oh, wow, he looks good. Like, he looked a lot better than he did when he was on TV a couple years ago. And yet, and like, wow, yeah, there was just a little bit more life to him. And then for a second, they got me. I thought, oh, shoot, is Kurt Angle going to, you know, undo the sin of having to have his last match with Baron Corbin and going to have it with Gable here? Like for a split second, I kind of went there. But then at the end of the day, I was okay with it because it didn't do some of the tropes that they do with the legends. He wasn't meant to look just completely pathetic and owned by the young guy. At the same time, he wasn't coming in there and just like hitting everyone with the angle slams and, you know, pinning five guys and then just, you know, walking off into the sunset despite the fact he's 50 some years old. So yeah, it's okay. And there's two versions of the Kurt Angle character. Like you're saying, there's the Kurt Angle we saw tonight in two segments, really, with the Edge segment and with the Milkomania segment. But then there's that brutal Kurt Angle killer. And I don't know how you can bring that back. Unless he's back like full time in a manager role, Kurt Angle and his actual athletic ability is what always gave him so much credibility. And when you don't actually have that, I don't know how you can pull that off. Like he was able to get way more out of that than someone who was way more popular than him, like Ronda Rousey, ever really has been able to do. Like he maximized that for so much of his career. So you believed in the killer Kurt Angle.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, it would be tough to bring back. I mean, no question, because, you know, he can't be in the ring. And so it makes it tough. And, yeah, Kurt Angle is one of those rare guys that you can go a different direction with him. And we saw that tonight. Okay, we'll go to Zach in Texas next. Gentlemen, Triple H has cleaned up a lot of the fundamental issues with Raw under the disgraced former CEO. So that allows us, I think, to refocus on his actual booking choices. And I got some questions. He's made Judgment Day more bearable, though the group still makes no sense, but they are really going for a 50 Shades of Grey angle where Dom becomes Rhea submissive? Is that really what they're doing? I'm not sure I want to see her leading him around. The Dexter Lumis storyline just isn't working. First of all, if he doesn't work there, quote-unquote, and isn't supposed to be there, security and the police would be swarming him, and he wouldn't be on camera. Secondly, Ciampa looks like an idiot for arguing with Miz when everyone in the building saw Loomis. This might be Hunter's first big fail. Speaking of fails, Dakota Kai and Io Sky not winning the tag titles is one thing, but under no circumstances should Aaliyah ever pin Dakota Kai. Hunter re-signed Kai just so she should be pinned by a woman who makes Dana Brooke look talented. I don't get it. Ooh, I mean, some tough words there for Aaliyah, Robert. I think we kind of handled that, but let's talk Loomis for a minute because we haven't really dug into that too much. Are you with Zach that it's just this is failing right now?
I don't know that it's failing. It's just like the part of the show that still feels like the absolutely part of the old era, where there's mystery, but I'm not actually intrigued by the mystery. It's just like kind of this mysterious thing. And everything just is kind of happening by chance, as you're pointing out, which is kind of unfortunate because I think The Miz has had, outside of that, a general positive shift, like his association with Ciampa, and I was talking about the AJ stuff earlier and Lashley. Like, I think that little section of the show generally has seen an improvement. And I think the other thing, too, is this is going to sound very disrespectful. No matter what, it's still just Dexter Loomis also. So
right. There's,
you know, and he's not terrible, but it's not like it's leading to some payoff that any of us would really, really care about. It feels very generic WWE, which right now feels pretty out of place. I might not look at it as harshly a couple months ago because it would just be, you know, that would happen next to the Lily segment or whatever. So it wouldn't stand out quite so much. I think it really sticks out too, and that's a problem.
Yeah, and I just, when I'm watching this thing, I'm going, okay, no, I'll give it the benefit of the doubt. It's interesting. It's a little bit different in terms of just, like, the players. You know, we have not seen Dexter Loomis and Miz do anything before. So, okay, that's fine. But why do we care? Like, that's the thing I can't get answered in my brain is why do we care about this? Why do we care? Okay, Miz is upset. Why do we care that Loomis is doing this? There's not enough definition around it. And, you know, if this were week two, okay, like you still got to, okay, just let it play out. But now we're what, week four, week five? Like you got to take it somewhere. And I think you got to define Loomis a little bit because otherwise I think it's going to get to this point where, okay, how many new ways can he sneak up on the Miz, right? And like them shine a light on him as he's in a car. Like, you know, you can't play that card very much more. So I'm at the point where it's like, make us care about this. You know, show the audience that this is not something that's just on TV to be filler, that's just on TV to, you know, get a laugh because Miz is being tortured by this Loomis guy. Like, tell an actual story here. And I think if you do that, you can build up credibility for these types of stories long term, but also, you know, who knows what Loomis can turn into if you give him a little real juice and not just silliness, which is what I think where I think they're at now.
Yeah, it's got the scent of like a lot of the factions that they were kind of debuting in the last couple of years when they were trying to jumpstart things. It kind of has. That feel. Are you getting the sense? Are they going with he's the evil guy that's trying to get to him, or is he just like an obsessive stalker? What way are you kind of leaning that they're going with here?
I'm leaning that like kind of not in either of those directions. I'm kind of thinking like they're positioning him as this stalker guy, but in a funny babyface way, like
oh, no.
To torment the Miz. Like I don't know how they could – I mean, if they do flip it around and he's supposed to be this, like, this bad guy, this menacing bad guy, like, then I really don't think they've struck the right tone here. Where are you at?
Yeah, I was thinking of it differently. You're probably exactly right. I was thinking of it more as they're trying to just portray him as this, you know, all-encompassing evil dude. Very generic. And then as we were talking through, I was like, oh, well, you know, they do stalker angles. It's – and they've done
yeah,
it. Actually,
not the first time.
They've actually done a few pretty well. You know, hey, Trish is showing up on Raw anyway these days, and she's been involved in several of them.
Yeah.
Over yeah, the yeah. years. So maybe that's where the influence is coming from. Yeah, and I now I think you're right because yeah, of course it's the Miz. Like why?
Yeah,
what
but,
are the,
I mean, but honestly, yeah. though, man, like, I think, you know, again, Dexter Lumis, the way you described him, is a lot more interesting than this Dexter Lumis that I think we're going to be getting. Just mm-hmm. because, where do you go? You know, because there you can play this card once. Okay, he's tormenting the annoying heel, but like, is he now gonna just then torment every other, like?
It becomes Hornswoggle after a while. Yeah,
it's Hornswoggle. Right.
Yeah,
it's Hornswoggle. Exactly. Great comparison. It's like it can work for a bit, but then you know, you can't go back to that well. So I actually think your angle is a lot more. It will be a lot more fun to watch. For better or worse, it's just a little bit more unique and I think more effective if you can pull it off here. With what they're doing right now, even if Dexter Lumis plays this to a T and Miz plays it to a T, like it ends one way and you can't really go anywhere else with it. So that's why I'm saying you got to make people care about this. And it remains to be seen. So, okay, we will finish up, Robert, with JB from Detroit. He says, I liked the Riddle-Rollins tape segment with Graves until they got to the part about each other's families. The remark Riddle made about Becky being the man in the family made sense in both reality and kayfabe and that Becky and Seth are real-life couples. The relationship has been part of those storylines in the past, and Becky has been known as the man for a while now. I felt like what Rollins said went too far in that it went completely outside any idea of kayfabe. We had no idea that Riddle's wife had divorced him and taken the kids, much less that he was even married before Seth's remark. It also brings to light the speaking out accusations against Riddle from a few years ago for those who are curious enough to Google it. I understand that Rollins is trying to be a heel, but to me, it felt incongruent to the story and more like cheap heat. Also, while I liked the angle segment with the Street Profits and Alpha Academy, it did feel like it dragged on a little bit too long. As a side note, that segment made me realize how much I would have loved to see a match between Riddle and Gable in both their primes. I think he meant Angle and Gable in both their primes. Yes, that would have been one hell of a match. As always, love the show. Go VIP. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. Did you have a problem with the content of that tonight, Robert?
No, but the objections are certainly valid. Here's the thing. When you take it kind of on its face, yeah, it's something from the real world and too far. But it's also not this work shoot kind of blending stuff. So I can live with that. Like, yeah, if you're on Twitter, you know about that stuff. But it's also not, again, it's not, you know, something with Cabana and Punk that's going on all meta that we would have to figure out or something like that. So I think that's fine. Now, I did think of it during the segment. I was like, well, shoot, if we're going to go there, Seth, why don't you just level another charge at him that you can throw at him pretty easily? Like I was thinking that maybe nefariously on my end, but I was like, wow, I kind of seemed like they were really, really close to that line. You know, I guess as long as you don't necessarily cross that line, because I think that would have been I don't even think like that would have been too far. Like that starts going to the territory of, you know, of like Charlotte and Paige from a couple years ago or some of the Jeff Hardy stuff where it goes from, you know, tasteless to, you know, from heat to tasteless. You know, all the other stuff, I think that was fair enough, fair game, so long as Riddle and honestly, hopefully his ex-wife are okay with. In that situation, I think the consent of those particular individuals is at least should be. Should be merited because it is real. You know, that's his real wife. Those are his real kids. That's their real mom. So you have to take quite a bit of care with those things.
Yeah, you're exactly right about that. And I think look, the reason it worked for me is the work shoot road you were traveling down, where it's like this is real life, but it's also if you didn't know it was real life, it absolutely makes sense within the context of the work story that they're telling on TV. You know, like you don't have to know that Riddle's wife divorced him and took the kids with her in real life for that line to still hit hard in the context of that promo and the feud. Like if that was not true, you know, and that was just written for Rollins to say, that still would have drove that story into a more personal area. And so that's why it worked for me. Where if you do know, it plays a little extra. If you don't know, you're like, wow, Seth Rollins is he's a really big jerk. I can't wait to watch Riddle beat him up. Like, so it worked on both levels. And I think that's the difference between like incorporating reality into your stories and meta. And there is a difference. And I think this walked the line in a direction that I'm, typically more comfortable with. Robert, anything else?
No, that's pretty much my take. I do think, I just want to add, like, it's something, I don't know if I heard Cornette or someone say it years ago, that the whole point of not, being PG is not that you you want rated R wrestling necessarily. You just want to be able to hit a zone every now and then because you don't go to it that often. So then it has impact. Because honestly, what do people say in these feuds in, kayfabe wrestling that ever makes you kind of believe that they would want to fight each other? That something like that does evoke emotion.
Right.
So long, again, as I said, as you take the proper care with doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. All right, Robert, I think we covered anything. Anything else in your notes or in your mind that you want to make sure that we get to? I'm scrolling through mine here, and I think we hit most everything.
Yeah, it's weird because I think I could just almost recall everything from the show, and usually that doesn't happen at this point in our proceedings.
Yes. No, right. Yeah. And we've gone long, so we'll put a bow on it right there. Thanks to everybody who called in, thanks to our emailers. Again, guys, Wade will be on the VIP side of things, running things down a little bit later tonight on the Wade Keller Hotline. You can go VIP right now and check that out, pwtorch.com/govip. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn, and you can go VIP, check out my weekly audio show on the canvas on the art of wrestling. This week, it'll be analyzing the art of a hell of a lot of events this weekend, from Clash at the Castle to Worlds Collide to All Out. We got a busy week on the canvas looking at the art of wrestling. So if that's your thing, go VIP and check it out. Also, check out pwtorch.com all week long for coverage on all the go-home shows and all the reports on the happenings throughout the week. And it is a busy one with Dynamite and Rampage and a batch of independent shows and, the stuff happening over the weekend with WWE, All Out on Sunday. It's a busy day, busy week. We've got you covered at pwtorch.com with news, reports, and anything else that you'll need. So make sure that's somewhere you're stopping. Check us out on YouTube. We've got some cool stuff, Robert included, that he can plug here in a minute. But subscribe to the YouTube channel. We've got content, new content going up every single day, every single week. We've got our flagship show, The Fireside Chat, with myself and Tyler Sage, just talking the news of the week. It's been a blast, and we've had some really good engagement with the audience. And so just, give it a shot. Check us out. Subscribe. Just search PW Torch on YouTube and you'll find us. Robert, always a pleasure, man. Thank you for joining me. Great stuff as usual. Always fun to talk wrestling, man. But one more time with some plugs and your social media, and then we'll ride off into the sunset here, as they say.
Well, as I mentioned, every Monday night as part of the Daily Cast lineup over here on PW Torch, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. If you want to interact with the show, we ended tonight with JB from Detroit. He's a frequent emailer to the show. MMALiveCast@gmail.com, MMALiveCast@gmail.com. And we'll take your questions on almost literally anything that we can get away with read on air. We will take your questions on for sure. And if you want to follow me on social media, find me on Twitter, RobsMV, R-O-B-S-M-V, where you can find links to anything I do with the Torch or on any other media platform. So go ahead and give me a follow. It was great to be on again. Check you guys out next time.
Awesome stuff. You can follow our brand at PW Torch. That's at PW Torch. And you can follow me on Twitter at Z Haydorn Torch, Z-H-E-Y-D-O-R-N Torch. Once again, thanks everybody for listening. We do appreciate it. For Robert, I'm Zach. And we'll catch you guys next time.